I mean, he looked good early. He had that one first pitch slider, got ahead of the park. It just wasn't his day. I think he was okay, but you know, didn't get away with anything that went in.
Like you said, he looked really sharp in the first two innings. Did you see anything different about him after that?
No, the one pitch, the home run was give him a slider because that doesn't get hit out of the park. He missed a little bit. Garcia hurt us all night. So, it's just not a good game to talk about.
When a team gets two hits, one of them's an infield hit, it always, you've seen this many times, it always looks flat, right? Are you okay with intensity, approach, and all of that?
Well, we were taking our swings. I don't think we're real happy with our plate discipline. They weren't trying. You can try, but then you got to execute. So, we chased. And, Frank kept telling us to get the ball up. And we kept swinging the ball down. And he had good movement. He made pitches. He had the count. He did the things he's supposed to do to get people out.
You talked about the chase a number of times this season. Can it be adjusted at this point? You've seen it adjusted in small doses, but not in something.
Just keep working on it. Yeah, you can fix it, man, because we've done it at times. Just have to stay on it. Haven't cured it yet.
You know what happened, that exchange between you?
Yeah, I think his swing nipped. Yeah, we weren't happy about that.
Tammy and Xander on ESPN 1000. Brian, did you hear that Tony actually made a comment about plate discipline? It seems to me that might be the first time I heard him really acknowledge it in such an obvious way.
You know, he said Frank, the hitting coach.
Yeah, Medicino.
Kept telling us to get the ball up. You know why? Because if you get the ball up, it can go out.
No, home runs do not matter, don't
well,
you say
Well, the
that.
Hits do. And he said, but we kept swinging at the ball down.
Yep.
And Dane Dunning, He gave Dane Dunning the Hall of Fame induction right there. I mean, God bless him. This is a Dane Dunning revenge game, and he showed.
Look, he had a decent game, but he did not. The Sox helped him in his success by not performing.
And he said it wasn't much of a game to talk about. And when you get two hits against that team, and you get nothing to show for it, and you've scored four runs in three games, it's not much of a series to talk about. But the fact of the matter is, Kopech did take 38 pitches in the third inning, right?
Right. And that's another thing, too. His first two innings were fine, good.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I have people here watching me. I have family here. Now it affects me in the third inning.
Yeah.
I didn't like hearing what I could actually make out from him in the postgame at all.
Wouldn't that impact you in the first inning?
That's exactly my point.
Did you look up and see mom and dad sitting in the 10th row of the box seats in the third inning? Were they late arriving?
Well, it's a lame excuse in the first place for a professional athlete. But then to say that was actually a thing when you had a first couple innings were solid? No.
Well, Paulie, our caller, said things have to be perfect. And other people have alleged that with Kopech. And Sully just said it. Until he starts going beyond five innings and they take the kid gloves off, you don't know how good. He's got the stuff. He's been very good at times. But until he gets six or seven innings on a regular.
Brian, is that a factor of him just over pitching and not being able to get there? Or do they still have the governor on him, so to speak, and they won't let him go to certain? I don't think that that's the case. I think the kid gloves are off. He's just not able to pitch an effective game, to get deep into a game like a Johnny Cueto. They have a guy on the staff that shows them the path to getting deep into a game.
Right.
And that's not striking everybody out.
Well, and look, Kopech is 26 and Cueto's 37. You do well, Michael Kopech, to pay attention and start taking notes with Johnny Cueto and his approach.
Everybody should have been doing that a few months ago.
You're right. I mean, that's a professional, okay? Mm. And that's a guy, maybe at this point in his career, he's still hungry and still trying to get whatever last drops out of that career, and he's motivated. But you're 26 and you haven't become you're still on the path, and I'm with Sully. I don't think they're trading him, but I mean, he's still going to be a starter for the White Sox moving forward. And will he ever be the ace? And, you know, yesterday I know our Twitter poll was 83% said that the White Sox have a better rotation, and Dylan Cease accounts for most of that. But mm-hmm. Giolito, don't know what you have here. You know, Lynn is getting up there, as we talked. Stroman, Steele, Thompson, and if they went out and got Carlos Rodon, I like the Cubs' chances of being a better rotation.
If they got Rodon, yeah, that would make a lot of difference. Now, back to Cueto for a second, right? Now, here's a guy who he gets scored on. He finds his way out of trouble mm-hmm. as long as he has run support, and he hasn't always had that. But on his own individual performance, he gets into trouble. He gets himself out of trouble. He goes deep into games. These are all things, as you mentioned, the other pitchers should be noticing. And I hope Ethan Katz has been drawing those comparisons and pointing those things out. Because, again, coaching is part of Major League Baseball. I know you get there and you should know how to do everything, but it seems as though sometimes this team is not, the coaches aren't reinforcing things that you should be doing in the field. Like Yoan Moncada last night didn't get in front of a hit to him. You know, he tried to take a hop
right.
to his left, and right. he had an error. And again, that's
Little League stuff.
That's Little League stuff that yeah. as a coach, I don't care if they're making multiple million dollars a year, you should be able to go up to them without them getting hurt and say, hey, you got to get in front of that ball.
Well, a couple things.
I would like to see it that way.
I cover Greg Maddux, and the young pitchers on that Cubs team, and I think it was last year with the Cubs before he ended up in Atlanta and had a tremendous career there.
Mm.
They were smart enough. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be able to execute it, but most of them were smart enough to want to sit next to him when he was charting pitches the day before he was going to start, and just glean whatever knowledge they could from that guy. And when someone like that's available, when you have a veteran presence like that, you better be smart enough to want to be the sponge, right? And be as close to that. And it doesn't mean you're going to have Greg Maddux dial and his ability to move the ball 2 inches off the plate and get the call and all that. But don't think you have it figured out,
right?
Okay? Because you can throw 105 or whatever it is. Don't be arrogant.
That was Kopech early on, where you just thought he can blow everybody away, and obviously he caused some arm. Right? There is a great amount of finesse in this game as a pitcher. You need to be able to do that, and you need to be able to adjust when you don't have your stuff anymore, and let the players, pitch to contact, and let your field. Yeah, your fielders take care of business. Dean is on the line. He's in Lyle. Wants to jump in on ESPN 1000. Good morning, Dean. What's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Actually, after listening to all these things, I could talk about just about everything from plate discipline to divas to my God.
There's a lot to talk about, Dean. A lot to talk
about. It is. I almost lost my train of thought. But anyway, here's the thing. You got a 2-1 game that we win in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
It's the top of the eighth, and I think Aloy gets a hit, and La Russa decides to pinch run with Pollock instead of Engel. And I'm going, this just doesn't make any sense, because Engel is like the Billy Hamilton. Engel comes in late in the game, he'll steal a base, maybe even two. I mean, mm-hmm. he's that good.
Yeah.
And then he's your defensive replacement. So La Russa has Pollock pinch run. Pollock takes off on a hit and run. It's a strike him out, throw him out, double play. And I'm like, what's going on? It made no sense.
And that's when Stoney was saying, well, someone missed the sign, right?
That was a mistake, right. He said someone missed the sign, yeah.
But it doesn't matter.
Right.
Engel should have been the guy running. And Engel should have been the guy pinch running. It doesn't matter whether he missed the sign or didn't miss the sign. The fact is, Engel was the guy to go in for that replacement.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
The other thing, I Moncada, 13.8, and the guy's hitting under 200. He's flashy. Don't get me wrong. He's going yellow. He's going fluorescent green. Whatever the case might be,
it's going up. It goes up to 17 million next year.
17. Yeah. And then 25 his option in 2025, which is insane. Last point, really quick, guys. Plate discipline. How can this team dismantle Verlander early in the year, going the other way, middle out? Now, anytime he throws a slider against these guys, especially a right-hander, everything is out around. Everything, yep. they're just rolling over everything. Mm-hmm. And that's a matter of they're pressing. Bring up Colas. That's the other last point. They need a spark. Bring in Colas. Bring back Berger.
Oscar Colas. Yeah. Berger's
Colas
rehabbing.
Bring in Chase Fry.
Yeah. Berger is, thank you, Dean, for the phone call.
Yep.
Colas, yeah, I would love to see him up here. Berger is rehabbing, and hopefully when he's available, we will see him up here somehow, some way. We've got to take a break here. Tom is on the line. He wants to jump in on the White Sox. 312-332-3776. We are here trying to figure out, and actually, Tom, you're going to like what Tom has to say, Brian. I think he is thinking that you can stick a fork in him as well. And we'll get to that phone call and yours at 312-332-3776. Talking White Sox on ESPN 1000, your home for the Chicago White Sox.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
This is Xander and Hanley on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Football Fest is free, but you do have to register for your tickets. Do that at ESPNFootballFest.com. Before we get to the phone calls, Brian, here is your starting lineup for the Chicago White Sox.
Tim Anderson leading off?
No, he is not, because Tim is sitting out. Why?
Suspension.
Because he was suspended. Why? Well, I think you should know that by
Tim
now.
Tim Anderson.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's Tim. A.J. Pollock in right field starting off. That is your leadoff hitter. Luis Robert in center batting second. Eloy Jimenez batting third in left. You've got Jose DHing. Andrew Vaughn at first base. Mm-hmm. Yoan Moncada at third base. You got Josh Harrison playing second. Leury Garcia batting eighth at short. So Lenin Sosa will be on the bench, but he is with the big team. And Sebi Zavala catching. There's another kind of bright spot for the Sox right there. Sebi Zavala.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, we saw him last year. Wasn't super consistent at the plate. This year, you know, he's straightened some things out. So that's been good. All right. Here's the phone call I think that you're going to like. Brian, Tom kind of goes along with your thinking. Tom in Western Springs on ESPN 1000. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, the bottom line is this is considered, I'm not happy about this, but this is considered owner and team fan abuse. Why? The White Sox are insignificant.
They're done, right?
I wouldn't use the word done or put a fork in it. They're insignificant. They're not good enough. And if they think that the Twins are going to lay down, that might happen. I doubt it. But in the overall theme of things, they're insignificant. And it's terrible for me to say that. But look at the lineup today and look what they want to blame everything on La Russa. It's not all La Russa. If these players can't realize that they're throwing away money that they would, extra money they would get by moving further in the playoffs in the World Series, then they're not only insignificant, they're dumb, and that's the bottom line.
Thanks.
You're not.
Tom.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. You're not. You're not wrong. Tom brings up something that we have not talked about. But, you know, players play for championships, right? They play for success. But when you have success, you're on successful teams, you do good for your own personal brand. In this day and age, personal brand is a big deal, right, Brian? We all have our social channels and all this stuff, personal brand. You know, these athletes, they get endorsements. I'm not saying that any of that is really in any of their futures except for maybe local endorsements. But the point is, there is that, too.
And I hear that, but God forbid, do I want to be a fan of a team where the playoff pool money is what's motivating them to get to the postseason?
No, but it's all part of it.
I hear that, and if it is part of it, then I got some issues. You're making more than enough, okay? Even if you're on a major league roster, you know, you might not be making Juan Soto soon to be money.
Right, but your minimum is still really good.
But you should be... You should be wanting to be in the World Series because that's what you do as a professional at the major league level. That's the aspiration of all teams. Well, not all front offices, but I would hope all players. They aren't.
That's what we would like to believe, but is it really?
No, I'm with Tom, though. They're not good enough. And so
no, They're not.
When Rick Hahn stands up there and Sully said, well, that's what he has to say. Okay, I get that. I don't have to buy it. I don't buy it.
Anybody that's paying attention that has something between their ears, you can't buy that.
You can say that, and I can say BS, and I'll call BS on it. Okay? This team died last night. I don't want to hear any more about this upcoming stretch against crap teams. We'll be fine. We got the easiest schedule of anyone in the division from here until the end of the regular season with 55 games left. You are what you are, Bill Parcells. You are what your record says you are. That this team died when Dane Dunning can hold you to one infield single, and that's an 11-game under 500 Texas team. Four runs in three games. Last night watching that, it's don't keep telling me you're good enough and you just got to grind and that things will fall into place and we're all healthy and watch this. I've been watching this. And you said earlier in the show, what's the next goal?
Excuse.
What's the next?
All the ones that we've heard this year, we have talked about, and they have been marked off the list.
Yeah, it went the last 3 weeks of September. Here we go with the division again. Oh, wait, as long as we're right there, that's when we hit the accelerator. I don't buy it for a second.
So they can't reach the accelerator.
No, they died for me last night. They get the last rites. They can't get three games over 500. I mean, they just can't. It's like there's Rob Manfred has a rule that the White Sox can't be three games above 500, so that's why they have to lose. Sully said this, and it's pretty frightening. The team is adopting Tony La Russa's personality. And again,
we played that way.
We play nighttime Tony, right? After night game Tony, it's painful to listen to.
But last year, you remember when Tony came to the team, and we thought, can he adapt to the new way of baseball? The Tim Andersons, all this kind of stuff.
Right.
When we this is going back to when we actually had swagger. So let's pretend it's last year. We have the swagger. Can this older guy, a Hall of Fame manager, adapt to the new ways of this game? Well, it seems like they have adapted to who Tony has become. Okay. He is not the fiery guy anymore. He is the guy that makes excuses for the bad performance of the kids. He enables all of this, and it seems like they are just settling into this.
And here's the other thing on that. As I was watching that game last night and reading about how gassed the Bears were, we're going to get to the Bears, but how these first couple practices in full pads, players talk about being laid out on the in the locker room on the floor because they went through 2 hours of hell. They need Matt Eberflus to show up and just give a pregame pep talk. I mean, he can't actually tell them that bring the hits principle.
Well, if you're going to do that, they're not going to do that, but they really literally need somebody else to
run this team. We know Tony, if I was the GM, he would have been fired by now, but certainly would have been fired after last night's game. I don't know if Rick Hahn's on the trip. My guess is probably not. But I would have been, as much as Tony doesn't bring players into his office because he doesn't want to intimidate them, if I was Rick Hahn, I would have been waiting in Tony's office. And he would have been relieved of his duties after last night's game. It should have happened months ago. We know it's not going to happen. We've gone over chapter and verse. As long as Jerry Reinsdorf is taking in breath, Tony ain't going anywhere unless Tony goes to him and says, I'm done. And that doesn't appear to be a possibility.
And I said it a few weeks ago, and I'll say it again. That's the only thing that if you really want to see change with this team, you hope that something like that might happen. People I saw on Twitter all over the place after last night, you're not the only one to just be disgusted. I am too. And there are a lot of people saying, all right, that's enough of Medicino. Stop. Do something. I'm at the point that I would like them to do something either, maybe something symbolic. Like fire Medicino or something's got to happen because otherwise we're just all fatigued. We're tired. That's enough of this. Nothing is changing.
Was caller Paulie said it's owner fan abuse?
He's not wrong.
Okay, and shame on the owner. Okay, because of whatever obligation, loyalty, best friend, whatever you have going with Tony La Russa, and you felt like there was one thing in your life you had to correct, and you did it to the detriment of everyone in that organization.
Everybody that who supports your team financially.
Right. And, I mean, after a game like last night, a manager like Tony La Russa would have been fired. Now, you could have argued he could have been fired five times this year. But that, to me, was a tipping point for me, and I'm not even a Sox fan.
Yeah.
I'm just a fan of watching baseball.
Hey, you know,
firing the batting coach right now, you know, there's not enough time left in the season for someone to come in and change everyone's approach and everything else. That might make somebody feel good for a day or two.
It's symbolic, and I said that as much.
Symbolic. I get you, but the manager has to be fired.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm saying that because we know he is not going to get fired. And the thing is, we've talked about how if you're a Cubs fan, do you want to give your money and support an organization that has abused you as a fan base? We can say the same thing on the South Side. Every game that goes by that we have a bad performance for this supposed World Series bound team, we could say that for the South Side. Before we hit break, we've got Jim in Crystal Lake wants to jump in. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hey, guys. So didn't the White Sox say as a whole that they needed to be pushed last year and the way they ran away with the division?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, they're being pushed all right. I'm not sure they're being pushed by another team. They're probably being pushed by themselves. They're beating themselves. But I just kind of wonder, all right, here you are. Be careful what you wish for. You got what you wish for. Go for it, guys.
Yeah, I wish they were pushing themselves.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah.
I don't see it.
They're not. They're not.
They all say the right things. Oh, you know, we've got to keep grinding, and we just have to bring the right approach and work hard. And, okay, we're sitting here on August 7th. All right, 55 games left.
Jim is exactly right. Last year it was the whole, we ran away with the division, we got kind of lazy, whatever, it was too easy. They got what they wished for. Be careful, especially when you can't live up to those standards. And that's what's happened this year. They got what they wished for, and they can't hang. They can't.
This is swagger. I mean, you know, this is all window dressing. It's all, this team is what it is. And you know, everyone's enabling, right? So, you know, Tony enables poor performance and tips his cap to Dane Dunning for a great performance. Okay. That's not good enough. It's too late in the season for cap tipping. Okay.
Excuses are gone. They're all gone. Unless you can find another one, we haven't heard another one that actually makes sense. There's no more to lean on. That's it, Brian.
No, they did. Someone needs to. They died last night, and so, you know, I keep waiting for someone on the team, a player, to kick somebody in the ass, getting somebody, you know, have a shouting match, do something. And instead, Solly told us, you know, that they're just becoming surly for surly's sake because they're tired of answering the same questions as to, you know, how's this going to get better, or when are you guys going to start playing consistently? And now they're just, you know, some people said on Twitter a week or so ago, we talked about that they hate this team. That's pretty strong. Those are fans talking.
Well, you know, and I get that. I get that because we were sold something and there's so many fingers to point everywhere. It's fatiguing. 312-332-3776. Brian, I know that you don't have a lot of time to watch TV. I've already given you some TV assignments, and I'm not sure if you got into Letterkenny yet and some of the other stuff. But there's another show that you need to put on your priority list, all right? We'll talk about that when we get back here on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back to Zander and Hanley on ESPN Chicago.
Chicago's home for sports.
11:36 on a Sunday morning. We're clubbing up in here, though. There's the State Street Fest outside the window. I got some DJ just pumping the tunes like it's about 2 in the morning at some club.
Those days long gone for me.
They're in the rear view for me, too. Yeah. Broadcasting from the old National Bank studio here on State Street. All right, before we get into this TV show that you have to watch, did you get into Letterkenny yet?
I tried. Now that's Hulu. Is that Hulu? I tried.
Yeah.
I was about the second or third hoop I had to jump through, and I just
forget. You know, it's better watched in the winter. It's very hockey centric.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Let's get to Jordan here downtown. Wants to talk about the White Sox on ESPN 1000. Hey, Jordan.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you today?
Good.
Yeah, I've been listening to the stuff. Hey, come on now. The general manager, they haven't provided any. they got rid of Rodon, never substituted another starter. You got a guy at third base who's outlived his potential. You got a guy at short that needs to go. Third base has got to go. And you got a left fielder who's at best, in the famous words of Leo DeRocher, plays the outfield with a meat cleaver. Those three guys got to go. They've got to go, and you got to get some pitching. I blame Tony. The way Tony coaches, he hasn't changed at all. What Tony does is lets everybody play, and at the end of the season, who's ever the hottest will play. This is what he's done with St. Louis and in Oakland and everyone else. So do I blame Tony? He's a scapegoat. It's the general manager and the owners who let the general managers do what they're doing. They've not improved the team from last year. You tell me where there's been an improvement.
No, there hasn't. And we expected a big one. You're right. You're right. There has not been one.
Yeah, Mankata's not going anywhere.
Thanks, Jordan.
He's making $17 million next year and $25 million beyond that.
You know, he said that Tony was a scapegoat. This is my take on it, okay? We have a lineup that is not as good as we were told that they were. However, Tony is not getting the most out of what we do have. So there's blood on everybody's hands. Absolutely. From the front office to Tony to the players who are not playing up to their potential, no matter who's coaching them.
Okay,
except with a few exceptions, Abreu being one of them, and Dylan Cease.
What is and Dylan Cease
and Cueto?
Yeah, what is a coach or manager's biggest job? It's to maximize whatever talent that
is right.
Player has. Yep. Put him in a position that he can succeed in. To give him the best opportunity to maximize his talents and his abilities.
Yep.
Beyond Dylan Cease, who I think pretty much is self motivated, from what I can understand and see. And I don't think Tony's a hands-on type guy with pitchers. Give me the long list of players who've really increased and advanced and matured talent-wise under this current regime. I mean, you got guys you signed it to the caller's point. You know, Grandal signs and it's great because he wants to be part of this and he hasn't lived up to his money.
Nope.
You overpaid Mankata off a great year and he's gone south on you. The younger guys, we're talking about Vaughn, he's not being put in the best possible position.
No,
to
he's
maximize.
Not. Right. And that is coaching. All right, Jack in Bronzeville. Hey, Jack, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, what's up? Happy morning, guys. This team is not serious about winning the World Series, and I'm not talking necessarily about the players. You know, all they could do is try their best. This organization has blown it from the get-go. Ever since they hired Tony La Russa, and they showed they are not serious. You know, I can understand you bring in Tony for the first year to kind of set the tone. Then after that, you need a manager that wants to win. Tony wants to be there, you know, because he doesn't want to be sitting on the couch. Now, the other smoke that they've been blowing us is this past offseason. They made little to no improvements. And then what happens at the trade deadline? Your plan
not
failed.
Not enough.
Exactly. Your plan failed by not adding anything. So what do? They add little to nothing again. This team is not serious about winning a World Series, guys. All Jerry wants to do in the organization is sell tickets and just meet the standard for not looking like they suck. You know what's bad? I love Jose Abreu. He's my favorite player in the whole MLB. He's the best player on that team right now, and he's 36 years old.
Yep.
What did they say about your young core? That makes no sense. And absolutely nothing wrong with him, and more proud of him because he's having an awesome season as usual. But they need to start making changes. Until they do, all they're doing is selling a sizzle and not the steak, man. It's getting old after a while as the season takes a holder.
Thanks, Jack. Appreciate it. You know what? That goes back to my tweet. They just don't want it bad enough because they did not do what they needed to do coming into this season or even at the trade deadline. It's right. As simple as that, Brian.
Right. I mean, did you make a play for Kyle Schwarber, who's hitting a home run every 11 at-bats for the Phillies? You know, yesterday the White Sox...
It's not even a swing and a miss. There was no swings. They didn't take their bat off the shoulder.
Right. I mean, you didn't have a need for him? I mean, I don't get it. You didn't want to pay him? I don't know. But yesterday, baseballreference.com, playoff probability...
Now what's it down to?
Well, yesterday it was 38.3%, right? And it was
when you first brought it up, it was like 22%.
Correct. So because they won 15 of 22 going into yesterday,
I don't buy it.
Okay, and 29.6% chance to win the division. Unfortunately, the Twins were 55.9% to be a playoff team, including 46.6% to win the division. in one game, the game that the White Sox officially were toe tagged in my world, and pulled the sheet over them, and we said last rights. They're 31.1% to be a playoff team, and your Twins are up to increased to 61.3%. That game, you had the two teams that you're fighting, allegedly battling against. They win, and you can't even get the bat off your shoulder against Dane Dunning. You're chasing fool's gold here. This team, Rick Hahn can tell you all about the talent that he has on paper. And he told you again, like you said, Tuesday, by not doing anything. And he told you in the offseason when he didn't do enough. They rode this team into town and thought, well, we were a playoff team last year. Certainly we're going to take another step.
You know what it is, Brian? It is, they're not willing to do what it takes.
No.
What they are willing to do is do what they can and hope that it takes enough. Hope that it is enough to get to where they wanted to go, the World Series championship team that they thought that they had. And we saw plenty of action around the league that showed us that teams really were going for it.
The Twins, they go out and get Carlos Correa, right? And then we said last week they need a starter and two bullpen arms. They go get a starter and two bullpen arms. I mean, they're not sitting there saying, well, this is a crap division and we're going to win this thing. They just don't want to win the division. They apparently want to make some noise in the playoffs. And here your Chicago White Sox sit the same spot they've sat for 3 months.
This is why somebody brought up a fan abuse. And it is a bit of fan abuse because we're being told to believe something that we clearly cannot believe based on actions.
No, because we're watching it.
We're right there.
Your eyes don't lie. You know what you see, and it's not near good enough.
Yep. You know what? It's been such a point of contention all year. We catch a gear, and then we lose the gear, and we can't seem to get to above 500 by three games has been since April, since that's the point. Giolito's on the mound today. That's a test. The best we can do is split now when we should have taken at least 3 of 4 from Texas.
Hey, don't worry. The All-Star break's coming next week, and they're going to get
You need a new calendar. I think your phone is broke.
This team is tired, and they're going to get 3 days, 4 days of break, and they're going to come out roaring, and that schedule sets up for them. And they've got
is this all a promise? You making me a promise?
No, it's all the excuses we heard. We're going to get a rest.
It's a lie. Injuries. Oh, they're all back.
Now we're healthy.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Except for Aaron Bummer. That's okay. Yeah. He wouldn't make the difference.
Yeah, but when all those things come together in the third week of September, watch where this team goes.
Oh, stop. We've heard enough. All right, Brian, we will get to that TV show. It is a must watch. We'll get to that next after this break here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago.
This is Xander and Hanley on Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
All right, Brian. You're born and bred in Chicago. Same here for me, right? Anybody who's been here long enough in Chicago understands the vibe of Chicago. So there's this TV show that I want to play a little clip from here.
Yes, sir. I'm going to make 3 sections, okay? They're going to be wet, hot, and sweet, all right? I'm going to take green tape, make those sections. Louie, I want you to get the sandwiches, put them in the conic sections.
Poppy. Okay,
Yo, sweet, bag, Sharpie, label that shit, please, chef.
Yes, chef.
Carmen Burzatto, a young, brilliant chef for the fine dining world, is forced to return home to his family sandwich shop, the original beef of Chicagoland, after a heartbreaking death in his family. This is from IMDb. A world away from what he's used to, Carmi must balance the soul-crushing reality of trading in Michelin-star restaurants for the small business's kitchen filled with strong-willed and recalcitrant staff and estranged familial relationships, all while grappling with the impact of his brother's suicide. This is The Bear on FX. Now, when you watch this TV show, if you're not aware of it, you got to start watching it. It's so very Chicago. It is filmed in Mr. Beef on Orleans. They filmed it in that space. How do I know? Because I've ingested many beefs in that fine establishment. I'm sure you have too, Brian Hanley.
I grew up at Johnny's in Elmwood Park.
Another fabulous beef place. There's so many to mention.
The best. So I was just telling Jay Cantu during the break and didn't know you were going to recommend that show. I've been watching it.
What? Wait. Brian Hanley, who has not watched Get Back, hasn't watched, like, I've thrown a list out of must-watch stuff that everybody else in the world has actually watched, and you haven't, and you have this long list, but you go right to The Bear?
I've been watching it since it started, and there's a star, I can't think of his name, he was in Shameless, and I love Shameless.
Yeah, he was a teenager in Shameless, right.
Yes, and he said he's appreciative for Chicago because it keeps him working.
It does.
And it is filmed in, they did the exterior interiors at Mr. Beef on Orleans, like you said, but it's recorded at CineSpace, right? The big studio complex that's been huge for Chicago. But I was just telling Jake, he says he likes to watch cooking shows, Behind You Chef. And I will say this about the show. The first four episodes, you know, you got to stick with it because it's worth it.
You do.
It's a little slow going and a little kind of dark at spots. And, you know, I was ready to give up on it, but
the storyline, you said slow going, but when you watch it, you actually, your heart starts to palpitate.
Oh, yeah.
And there are professionals that say it is so realistic they can't watch it.
Right. The kitchen, and the kitchen is like chaos. An orchestra. Yeah, and everyone's got a job to do. And when the kitchen is singing, everyone's doing their job, and it's chemistry and all that. But it is, and Chicago being a great foodie town and having great chefs at all levels, from fine dining all the way down to beef shops and hot dog stands. I mean, talk to Mike North, the great Mike North, and he and BB had their hot dog stands. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. It's Chicago. It is well done.
So very Chicago.
Yeah.
Right, Jeff? You see that in there where he calls Carmi because he's a Michelin star chef. Right. He's like, we call each other chef. That's a sign of respect.
Right.
And Rosie calls everybody Jeff.
Yeah.
So I have taken to calling random people in my life Jeff. That's how much I'm enjoying this show.
Right.
Of course, they get the reference if they watch.
The whole ensemble of cast, I mean, everyone's just great actors and actresses. It's well written, well done. Highly recommend it. Again, it might take you a little bit of perseverance to get through the first two, three, four episodes.
See, did it take you that long? It was halfway through the first, and I'm like, okay. I mean, I got it right away, but I got hooked halfway through the first. Sometimes, you know, these things do take an episode or two to get into it.
Right. I mean, the first three or four aren't late episodes. I mean, you know, they're laying the groundwork and building all the foundations for the characters. And so, you know the backstories and all. But I didn't know you were bringing that up. And I was just mentioning to Jake, who told me during the break, by the way, that his girlfriend knew Staley's full name. So she's a keeper, right? She knew Staley DeBarrett.
Wow. Fabulous.
She's
Dude.
A keeper, Jake.
Put a ring on that.
She said she doesn't like any, because I think I used your line, Clark no pants, Brian.
Yeah, that's
and
Clark
she, the, no pants, Clark right. slander, she said.
Nope.
All right, so if you know this show, then you heard this. I need you to help me make sense of this, okay? This is from the TV show The Bear on FX, available streaming via Hulu.
I haven't gotten
to
the whole
season. Why the fuck are you on the Kennedy? She chill the fuck out. Cicero lives in Naperville.
No. Cicero's in Wilmette now. You got to get on the f***ing Eden.
That's right. That's my bad.
They mentioned getting to, you're on the Kennedy going to Naperville.
No.
And then you have to go to the Edens to get up to Wilmette. Now, that's correct. Right. Yes. But how does that make sense? If you're going south, this is the only way it could make sense, okay? I figured this out. If you're going south on the Kennedy to the Edens Junction, and you get off at, what is that, Keeler there, and you go under and you reverse your course, get on the Edens North. That's the only way you can make that happen and still say you're kind of on your way to Naperville. But then again, why are you taking that way? You can go down 53.
Well, I mean,
you know, that makes me crazy. I am the guy, when I watch TV shows, like in the 70s, like in, Streets of San Francisco or something, right? Remember that old show? It was Michael Douglas in that. Yeah. Where like a Chevy, like the police car is a Ford, and they're chasing a Chevy, and the Chevy jumps and lands as a Ford. It's like, okay, what's wrong with the continuity here? Can you guys please pay attention? And that will drive you nuts.
And when Harry met Sally, they were going the wrong way on Lakeshore Drive.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, they were supposedly going to New York, right? And they were going north.
For all the money that is spent on films and TV shows, you would think that they would try to get it exactly right. Now, I know that there's Chicago Med and, you know, all this other stuff. There's a lot of stuff that I have not watched.
No, I won't watch.
And there, you know, who knows how detailed that is. But that caught my attention. And even as I watched it, it's like, wait a minute. I got to make sense of this. This is driving me crazy.
The first one, was it, what was the first one, the Chicago franchise? It was Chicago. I didn't watch it, but they used the ostensibly on the TV show, the house that six or seven of them shared was, you know, it was the corner house on my block, right?
What TV show would this have been?
It was the first whatever, the Chicago PD, the Chicago...
Oh,
whatever.
Okay.
What was the first one?
Chicago Fire?
Yeah.
Okay,
so you know, supposedly the six or seven of them, and you know, they all come out of this big house, and all I know is I didn't watch it because they also, every week or two, they shut down the entire damn neighborhood, and because they were filming, right? They were filming in the house, they were filming outside the house. And they would also film over at, the bar on Lottie's?
Lottie's,
right?
Okay.
Yeah, that, yeah, and they renamed it for the show.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I was coming out to get my mail one day, and some woman with a headset and walkie-talkie starts screaming at me that I'm in the shot and to get the hell back in my house. I'm like, I didn't know I was in the house working all day. I just came out to get my mail, and now I'm being told to get in the house because... You know,
hey, we're getting into the script already. Somebody's getting their mail. Big deal. Send me a check.
And it's like, you can't go down your alley and park your car in your garage because we're very important Hollywood people. I'm like, okay, where am I supposed to park? Well, about three blocks from here. I'm like, I tired real quickly on that show and never watched it, but because... The first couple of years, they were just, you know, making my life.
They got their permits, Brian. You can't mess with
them. Yeah.
For the love of God.
Well, you should have made friends with one of the producers. Maybe you could have worked yourself into a scene or two.
Yeah, I think that ship sailed. But anyway, yeah, I just, as soon as I saw the signs go up that they tied
Brian Hanley playing crabby old guy getting his mail. Take one.
But then, you know, the no parking signs would go up because we're going to be filming and you're like, oh, here they come.
All right, so we're up against break. We are going to talk about the Bears, but I have one more Bear cut to play. I want to play outside this break. Is that cool, Jake? We'll play it on the other side of this break because it's sports related from the TV show. And if we're talking about this on ESPN 1000, we have to hear this next cut. We'll do it after the break. Back in two on ESPN 1000 Chicago.